Hey there, boys and girls. You are listening to Inside the Desert Oasis Room, episode number 52. This episode is sponsored by Tandaway Rum. Established in the Philippines in 1854, Tandaway is one of the world's largest rum producers and winner of over 170 international medals in the past four decades, including Brand of the Year in London's World Branding Awards Rum category from 2015 to 2017 and Rum Brand Champion of the World by thespiritsbusiness.com in 2015. As sponsor of the Inside the Desert Oasis Room podcast and the toast to Master Ninja Ray Buen at the legendary Tiki Tea in Los Angeles, California, Tandaway is the perfect companion to celebrate all things tiki. For more information, check out their webpage at tandawayusa.com or follow them on Facebook or Instagram at tandawayusa. This podcast is also sponsored by the Royal Hawaiian. Founded in Laguna Beach, California in 1947, the Royal Hawaiian is South Orange County's premier tropical drink and dining destination. Come try their signature cocktail, the Lapu Lapu, a delicious combination of tropical fruit juices with a generous float of dark spirits. Or other island-inspired favorites like ahi tuna poke or the dynamite crab-crested mahi mahi. Enjoy their delicious brunch or drop in for happy hour from 2:30 to 5:30 p.m. daily for drink specials and more. To make a reservation, visit royalhawaiianlb.com. On this episode, we share drinks and stories at the Hale Kahiki, located in Echo Park, California. The Hale Kahiki is the home tiki bar space of Alan Smart and Michael Uhlenkott. If you're a fan of SpongeBob SquarePants, then you're a fan of Alan's work. He's the animation director for that show, and his partner Michael Uhlenkott is an artist and graphic designer whose work you've probably seen or purchased on sites such as Spoonflower. We're also joined by another Michael, Michael Hantula. He's the creator of the Tiki Bar Name Generator, a fun slot machine-styled application that's strangely addicted. Google it and see for yourself. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as we did bringing it to you. This podcast is a grassroots effort, so I appreciate all the love and support you've given us recently, and I can't thank you enough for that. With that said, sit back, relax, and enjoy this recording with Alan, Michael, and Michael, direct to you from the Hale Kahiki.
Inside the Desert Oasis Room.
Cheers, everyone, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Cheers, everyone. Cheers. Clank your glasses.
Cheers, everyone.
Yeah. Adrian didn't try his drink yet.
I haven't.
Cheers.
Cheers. Mm. Cheers. And what is this drink, Alan?
Well, I call it the 5-0, but it's...
Oh, God, it's so good.
It's really a plantation pineapple daiquiri.
So what's in it?
That I learned the recipe from Adrian, actually.
Oh.
Didn't you make some changes to it, though?
You made it pinker.
Yeah, I made it pinker. No, I used the Smuggler's Cove Demerara sugar syrup instead of regular
sugar syrup. Right.
So what's in it?
Yeah, it was actually Kevin Up the Grove's podcast with Adrian.
Oh,
they both.
So Kevin gets to be in two podcasts now.
They were in a swap cast. It was very exciting.
A what?
A swap cast.
We did a swap cast.
I thought you said
cast.
Swamp cast.
Well, you know, Kevin has a really good podcast about rum, and
that's right,
and it's very informative. And we did one together just because we thought it would be fun to do one together, and we shared each other's audio, so that was kind of neat, you know.
Yeah,
and it almost sounds like we used the same audio, but you know, now that I'm revealing the secret, is we did a second take. Because we did a take for mine, and then we did a take for his. But we tried to like make it sound exactly the same, so they are a little bit different. So,
well. Oh, that's funny.
Two sips into that daiquiri, and he's already
revealing secrets.
Well, liquor him up, Alan.
Well, thank you guys for having us over.
Well, thank you.
For our listeners out there, we are at the Hale Kahiki in Echo Park. In an unknown area of Echo Park. This is the home bar.
The address
bar.
Is.
This is the home bar of Alan Smart and Mike Uhlenkott. And then we have a straggler here.
Another Michael.
Mm. Yeah, who invited this guy?
I just haven't left after the last party.
I just felt bad. He was standing on the sidewalk with a cardboard sign.
That's looking for tiki.
Yeah, that said, please help, looking for tiki drinks.
Same way I get into most of my relationships.
I had to pick him up.
Oh, most of them, huh? Well, we'll have to tell Misha.
So you never answered your own question.
Who are you talking to?
What was my question?
Your question was if you actually ever learned to say the alphabet backwards.
No. No, that's something that I think everyone should.
There was a time when I tried to learn it backwards.
Yeah. Can you do it now?
Oh,
do we have to do it fast?
It's been several years. Okay, I'll try it.
I'll give you the first letter.
Do it like before you've had one drink, okay, and then after a drink.
I've had one sip.
So after one drink.
I've had one sip, so here, I'm going to give it a try right now.
Yeah.
ZYXVUTSRPQONMLKJGIHGFEDCBA.
Where's K? Did you already say? Did you say K?
KJ.
He said it so fast, there's no way of proving it.
ZYX. If we're having real talk right now, if I go with the alphabet front ways, okay, I still have to sing parts of it to remember where I am. Hold on.
Okay. A, B, C, D, E, F,
I spend very little time thinking about the alphabet in my life.
Now, the alphabet song is also the same as
Twinkle, Twinkle.
Twinkle, Twinkle, okay.
And it's really an older song than that. It's a French song, I think. Mozart wrote a whole theme and variations on that tune.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like 20-something variations, I think. I don't know. Yeah. Beautiful piece of music.
Back, pre-20th century, it was also much more common that songs were constantly tunes were repurposed in music so that you would do variations on a theme, you would change the words.
Right.
And these songs, once people learned the tune would become popularized, and then change up the lyrics.
Yeah, so they'd be familiar with the melody already, so they would like the song probably
right
off the bat because they were.
And it's how in some communities it's how news was delivered. You would kind of talk about the themes of the day by taking what would essentially become a pub song, and people would come out and sing the not daily news, but just sort of things going on in a community or in a region.
Like the news guy in ancient Rome. Did you ever see? Was it called Rome, Al? That show. Mm-hmm. And there's a guy who would stand out in the Forum of Rome and in a toga or whatever he's wearing, and like the witch Cleopatra, blah, blah, blah. He would announce the news. It was really hilarious. It was really funny.
Like a town crier?
Yeah, kind of that. Yeah. But he'd be in the middle of all this crowd of people.
Now, did you know that Hot Cross Buns and Three Blind Mice are the same song?
Are they? Well, can you sing the first line?
Yeah. So sing them both for us.
Three blind mice. Three blind mice. And then
see how they run. See how they run. And then when you were a kid and you picked up a recorder, they taught you how to play a recorder at school. It was hot cross buns, hot cross buns.
And it's a round, right?
Da, like, da, da, da.
I could start singing with you.
Yeah.
Right?
So there you go. I don't know the words to also hot cross buns.
Yeah,
I think it's just a lot of hot cross buns over
there. It's a lot of hot cross buns in that song.
Now, speaking of people reading news.
Yeah.
You know, in Cuba, they have these cigar factories where they have rollers. They have rows of people that just roll cigars. And it's a skill. So they're very sought after, and when they find the right people who can roll cigars a specific way, they give them a full-time job and just sit down and roll cigars all day long. And while they're rolling these cigars, there's somebody that stands or sits at the front of this room and reads the news to them at the beginning of the day, and then later on in the day starts reading them books. So they listen to books while they're rolling cigars.
That's a really good idea.
So I want to talk about a couple things with you guys that the last time I was here, Michael, you brought up that you were in the Cook Islands.
Yes. Three times.
So, a lot of people know that the Cook Islands is a favorite place of mine to go to. I've been to Rarotonga and to Aitutaki. I haven't been to any of the other smaller islands like Atiu or any of these other, the farther out islands. But you told me a story about when you went, you saw a collection of velvet paintings.
I did, yes.
was amazing. What year was it? You know what? I've been there three times and I can't remember which time. No, it was the first time I went, I believe. Or what, Alan?
I was there.
Was it with you when we saw the Black Velvet paintings?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. So that was in 1995. We were going to... Sorry, I'm a little slow.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember.
Okay.
So, okay, it was 1995, and it was I was going to Rarotonga to help set up this centennial celebration for an author who lived in the Cook Islands. He was from California, but he lived in the Cook Islands.
What was the author's name?
Robert Dean Frisbie.
Oh, yeah.
So Frisbie lived in the Cook Islands on an island.
I know that name. He lived there for... Is he the same person that I'm thinking of that lived there by himself, or was that another person?
Yeah, well, we're talking about the 1920s and 30s. Okay, so he moved from California to more remote islands. He kept moving to a more remote place. And he ended up finally on this island called Puka Puka, which is in Cook Islands, right? And he married a woman there, had kids. And then they moved to an even smaller, an atoll called Suvorov, all by themselves. They were the only
ones. Do you know that person?
Well, I know his family.
Wow.
He's dead. He died in 47, I think.
Okay. I think the name of his book was An Island Unto Oneself. Is that the name of the book?
Is
that the other author?
That's Tom Neal.
Oh, Tom Neal.
Tom Neal was a Frisbee fan like me. In the 70s, he moved to Suvorov, the same island.
The same island. And he did three, what's the word that I'm looking for? He did that three times.
So, Tom Neal?
Yes.
That's possible. It's been a long time.
I think he lived there for 2 years, and he came back to the United States, or I don't remember exactly where it was, but he left living in isolation, and then he went back there and lived there again for another few years in isolation, came back to civilization, and then moved back permanently, and eventually finished his life there. I think that he spent the last 13 years of his life in isolation.
Yeah. Amazing guy.
So continue your story.
Anyway, so so there was going to be in 1996 there was going to be a 100-year celebration of Robert Dean Frisbie's birth.
Okay.
And so
organized by you.
Organized by me and the Frisbee family. And
it was your idea.
Right? It was my idea. But whatever. So it was going to be at the museum and library in Avarua.
Okay.
I don't know if you visited it there.
I've been to Avarua.
They have like a complex of like a museum, like an anthropology museum.
I've been to that museum.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, it's great.
So we got the entire museum basically. For this show, and so the year before, Alan and I went on a reconnaissance mission, and when we were there, we were with this woman who's very connected to that island, and she introduced us to all kinds of interesting people. And one of them was this woman, and I probably shouldn't say her name, but anyway, she was a prominent New Zealander who lived in Avarua, and she'd lived there since she was a young lady and married someone, and they lived on this island. And she had this beautiful, like tropical mid-century house that they had built. And they were friends with everybody. They knew everyone, including Lee Tag.
So what I found interesting in the story was that I believe you told me she had a bunch of Lee Tags, right?
Well, there's several portraits of her.
Right.
And her family.
So the question that
there
I have...
Lots, yes. Lots.
The question that I have is, Lee Tag's always been associated with Tahiti.
Exactly.
Did he find his way
to Rarotonga? I don't know.
He
must have. Either she would have gone to Tahiti. I don't remember her stories. It was so long ago. I don't remember how she got, in touch with him or how it happened. Or she may have collected this stuff when she went to Tahiti. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But in her house, we went in her living room and sat in there. And it was like a...
Which was beautiful.
Beautiful tropical building. And I think it was like 2 stories up, wasn't it? With really high walls and salon style. There were velvet, black velvet paintings around the entire thing.
Right.
Rivaled, you know, the Rincon Room collection.
Right.
amazing stuff, like a full, what do you call it, full life portrait?
Full size. Yeah.
Full size portrait of her in black velvet.
And that was painted by Liteg?
As far as I know, that was Liteg, or there was at least one by him of her.
See, that's interesting, because then there is a question of, did Liteg spend time in the Cook Islands?
Did he, yeah.
Or, like, we don't know, right? Like you said, did she go to Tahiti?
I would imagine he would have gone,
You could
probably.
Possibly ask his
it's,
son.
It's only like a one-hour flight away.
Yeah, it's not far.
Do you know what era those paintings were made?
Oh, gosh. That's a good question. She was elderly then, Alan. In 96, she was probably in her late 80s, I'm guessing. So, it could have been, I don't know, 40s, maybe, 50s. Is he still painting then? When did he stop painting? I don't know the history.
I have a book, but I don't have that information memorized.
You know, his son is alive in Tahiti. He he gives tours and stuff. You could contact him, I imagine.
Is his son painting?
I don't know if he's a painter. I don't know the son. I've tried to email him with questions about Liteg, but he hasn't responded.
Mm.
And there's a bit of an art to painting on black velvet that a lot of those painters will protect. So I wonder if that was passed on.
So, from what I understand, painting on black velvet, what makes it different than painting on canvas is that you have to do it with a lighter touch. Mm. Because canvas does not have fibers that stand on one end. Yeah. So when you paint onto those fibers, if you put too much pressure, you flatten the fibers, right?
Yeah.
Where you don't have that worry with canvas that you can...
That would make sense.
You know, and it will obviously...
You can mush it all down if you press too hard.
Right, right. So it's kind of a lost art form. I think that there's one person that's... Oh, I shouldn't say one. I know that there's a few that are reviving that art form. But here at the Velveteria in Chinatown, I know that they commissioned someone out of that museum. It's a black velvet museum. Mm-hmm. And they do commission someone out of that museum to do black velvet paintings for them when they want to have something done that hasn't been done before. Like, for example, they had one commissioned of Sven.
Oh, I've seen that one. Yeah,
that's
a good
neat.
One. Yeah.
So the one where he's kind of has his hands.
Yeah, he's got his hands over. It looks like he's, you know, like a gypsy over a crystal ball, but it's a Japanese glass float with a pufferfish inside.
Who's Sven?
he's the ship's captain of the cruise I went on, Norwegian Cruise Lines.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you're talking about...
Sorry, Sven.
The other Sven. he's your neighbor.
He is, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Let's call him up.
So we have... So in the neighborhood that we are in right now, we have... listen to this, like, tiki celebrity neighbors. We have King Kukulele in the neighborhood.
That's true.
And we have Charles Phoenix in the neighborhood.
Yes, and Sven.
And Sven. And you guys.
Who else?
Well, I hang out on the street corners here.
That's right, with a sandwich on.
Well, when you stand on the street corner with a cardboard sign, that doesn't count.
Yeah. Because we know you're from the west side.
And we were talking about celebrity.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah.
Zing.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's definitely a fair statement.
Well,
I don't even have my own...
You're
home bar yet.
You're a little bit of a celebrity in that, but an unknown celebrity in that you created the Tiki Bar name generator.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And people love that.
Yeah.
But people don't know who created that until now,
until
right?
Now.
People just use it.
They use it.
Can we talk about it, like how you came up with it?
Yeah. It's a very simple...
Algorithm.
It's based on a slot machine.
A over B.
But... It's so difficult. You know, there were all these online conversations about.
Well, the way that I see it is, they're like Mad Libs, right?
Like what?
They're like Mad Libs.
Yeah.
Right?
Or a slot machine.
Which he was just about to say.
No, they're like Mad Libs. Because like a slot machine, every wheel is the same. They just...
I see what you're saying.
But here you have the blank blank, right?
Sometimes the doesn't even show up. It's very random. Mad Libs, I think of as something that people fill in themselves. Whereas this will generate for them...
We'll see, but the middle one would be a verb, and then the last one would be a noun. So you would have like the Black Lagoon.
You mean an adjective?
An adjective. It would be an adjective. You're right. The middle one would be an adjective, and then the last one would be a noun. So
correct.
Like the Black Lagoon, the
Black Lagoon,
Black Lagoon. The Blue Lagoon.
The possibilities are endless.
The Red Lagoon.
The possibilities are endless.
I will say I've made it so that that algorithm does change every once in a while, and you can get things like, the Kings or the King Kamehameha's Forbidden Luau Hut.
That's what, 4 or 5 words,
right?
Are there some that are that long?
It gets tricky sometimes.
There are
those are rarer. It generally follows a very...
Your mind is an amazing thing.
Not all the time.
No, really.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Probably not.
Let's move on.
Okay. No.
So wait, now your list of words, your adjectives and nouns, how did you come up with those? How did you decide what kind of words? You understand the question I'm asking you?
I vaguely do.
Did you just pick any words out of the dictionary? Or did you pick... words that have a tropical...
The names are name generator. Came from a lot of sources, but some of the most helpful are old matchbook covers.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, you see the names of different venues, and you can usually extrapolate one word, maybe a whole name, and you separate it out, plug it into different parts of the generator, and then it can be repurposed.
Now, I noticed that you also use some of the current tiki bar names that are out there. Because I did get Rumpus Room once.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, come on. I'm not going to build an entire name generator and not have it generate one of the more important home tiki
bars. Of course, when that came up, though, I didn't picture it as you copying the Rumpus Room. It was a combination of the Rumpus Room and the Desert Oasis Room. So it was the Rumpus...
Yeah.
Room.
Yeah. Rumpus. If you look at the code, you'll see that it was Rumpus and then Desert Oasis Room.
Room, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad a lot of people don't catch that. That's very astute.
That's funny. I used to use that. We used to use that tiki generator.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. There's controversy.
Like, how long has it been on the...
It's been a few years since I've really touched that site.
So it was a couple of years ago, that we would look at it.
Now, speaking of home tiki bars, I gave Bosco a credit for being probably the first home tiki bar in the current revival. And then Tiki Tony corrected me and told me that it was probably you, Michael.
Well, the current revivals, what is the current? When does that start?
Okay.
I would call the current revival like a third wave.
Good point.
Wait, step back and break
second
down the
wave.
Waves for it. Yeah,
second
break,
wave.
Break down the waves.
Okay, there was the original. The original tiki thing, right?
Right. Original was... Well, what would you call the original?
50s, 60s.
And then what
post-World War II.
And then what would you call the second wave?
Well, if I was part of the second wave, that would have been during the punk scene in the late 70s.
Okay. So, did you have a home tiki bar in the late 70s?
Yes.
You did?
It was more like the early 80s. In the late 70s, I was in a band and also at an art collective, and we were heavily into tiki and exotica and stuff. And like with people like Jeffrey Valance, who's an artist, Steve Thompson, Boyd Rice.
Oh, Boyd Rice, yeah.
Yeah, we were all together in this sort of little tiki world that it was just us and, I don't know.
Is Boyd Rice the one that did Quiet Village Idiot?
Did he? I wouldn't doubt it. It sounds like the title he would come up with.
Quiet Village Idiot. So
he was in a noise band.
So let me ask you this. Oh, if you were in, you were already in this tiki quote-unquote scene, for lack of a better term.
It was a very small
one. If this was in the 70s, would you say that, is it a revival?
Yeah. Well, it had died. Tiki had died.
Yeah, but I mean, like, in the 70s, it was still kind of hanging on a little bit,
Hanging on, yeah.
It was really, it died really more in the 80s.
But everyone, right? You know, my parents were already throwing out their Martin Denny records.
Okay.
No one was doing, like, backyard luau's anymore.
Yeah.
It was really kitschy when we were doing it. We were reviving something that was recently passed that our dorky parents were doing.
And you had started building a home bar at that time? You already had something?
Yeah, yeah. At Jeffrey Valance's house, I lived at his house in Canoga Park.
Okay.
We had a whole backyard patio tiki themed thing. We'd have little luau's and bands would play.
Were you thrifting for tiki mugs and thrifting for old Hawaiian records and Hawaiian
Absolutely.
Shirts? And so you were doing all the
stuff. Had a huge collection of LPs and tiki stuff. Lots of, it was easy to come by back then. You just go in a thrift store and it was, you know, you could find a whole shelf of tiki mugs and Martin Denny records and stuff. It was insane how much stuff there was.
And I had that reminds me of a dream that I had one night that I had a dream that I was thrifting, and you know, I walk into these thrift stores nowadays, I don't really see anything, but in this dream, I'm walking through a thrift store I've never been to before, and it's chock full of stuff, and through all the things that I, you know, that's on the bric-a-brac, I see this tiki mug that I've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, oh wow, look at that, I'm gonna take that. So I take it. And as I pick it up, I notice, like, right next to it is something else that I'd never seen before, another tiki mug. Oh, wow, there's another one. And as I take that one, I notice another one next to that. And as I'm taking these things, now I have, like, five or six in my hand.
I want to go to this thrift store.
I know. Now I have five or six in my hand. And as my focus widens on this shelf, which is like a bookshelf, it's covered in tiki mugs, all different,
what?
All stuff that I'd never seen
is this
before.
Recently?
No, this is a dream. This is a dream.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dreaming.
I saw you getting excited.
Yeah.
I missed a very operative term of his
dream,
story
here. And so I can imagine, like, when you say that you
that's
saw shelves
like.
Full of tiki mugs, that's unbelievable.
It was unbelievable. People
didn't know.
It wasn't precious at the time. It wasn't
collectible. Well, they had turned their back on it. Society in general had turned their back on the idea of the escapism.
Yes.
Like tiki. It was about...
At that time, they really called the 80s the decade of destruction, because that was a decade where they were tearing everything down.
Yeah. In fact, we would frequent... There was a great tiki bar on Fairfax called Kelbo's.
Yes.
Amazing. Not the one on Pico. It was the one on Fairfax near Cantor's.
Mm.
Oh my God, it was incredible. We went there all the time. We lived at this place. And
now, what was
we
it
had
like?
Bands play there too. Bands would come
in. And punk bands.
Punk bands.
If I'm not mistaken,
what was it like at Kelbo's? Was it something that was it just you guys? Was it a very popular place?
It was us, no. And then like three or four drunk old guys who, you know, with gray hair.
When I was in high school, I had a buddy that worked at Bahuka.
Oh, yeah.
And back then, I'm going to date myself, but this was like...
I already did it.
This was like 15 years before the Book of Tiki was released. And so there was no tikis in there. There was the big one, the real tall guy. Mm. I can't remember what they named him, but the real tall one that was inside the front door that they later moved over to buy the bathrooms. But other than that, there were no other tikis. They still had all the aquariums, but the walls weren't painted, you know, this dark brown color.
Oh, really?
The walls were white, and people were writing their names everywhere, right? So if you looked at the booths before they closed down and the years before they closed down, you noticed that there were names that were carved in the booths and everything was painted over. That's a remnant of that time when people were writing their names on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I had a buddy who was a waiter there. And that's why we used to go there, because he was, you know, it was easy to get a tropical drink when you have a friend that works there and you're not old enough to have a tropical drink yet. So he would serve us drinks. And before they closed, you would think that Bajuca was chock full of stuff, and it was. But it was actually considered very bare to me and to my friend that used to work there. Because at the time that he worked there, you couldn't even see the ceiling at all. There was so much stuff. But now you could see through everything because people would take stuff back then. In the 80s, people
really?
They would drink, and then they would climb up.
Yeah, we would take stuff from Kelbo's.
They would grab something. Yeah, and they would take it home.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I see you guys, too. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I'd always wondered about Bajuca's, because it didn't seem that tiki-ish, really.
Right. Like, now, it became more tiki-ish after the Book of Tiki, because they kind of embraced that whole thing. And
oh, so they put
and then they had
on.
There was a guy that
Thank
was working
Sven.
There. He was a server who started carving tikis specifically because of the Book of Tiki, and started putting them all throughout the restaurant. And, you know, here's an interesting fact about this. That guy who's I'm talking about, that my buddy that was a waiter there, he's now married to my first wife.
That's weird.
Oh, so you've been married multiple times.
I've been married multiple times. I've told that story before. My current wife's my second wife, and I'm her third husband. So between the two of us, we've been married five times.
Wow, you guys.
Yeah. he's still a very good friend of mine. He takes good care of my kids, and you know, I like him very much.
Okay.
So yeah, we're very good friends still.
That's
but he, you know, he owns a couple of his own restaurants now, but that's beside the point. You know, when he was at Bajuca, we didn't know what kind of a special place that was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously until it's gone, like Kelbo's, right?
Oh my God,
Kelbo's is gone.
Yeah. Sad. It was chock full of stuff.
Yeah,
that place.
I want to hear actually about your take on the two Kelbo's and the differences between them. But before that, Alan, can you tell us what this cocktail is you just made for us? Because it's fantastic.
It's glorious.
Oh, thank you. It's one I actually made up on my own.
Does it have a name?
I call it the Ariki.
And what does Ariki mean?
It was actually the name of somebody we met when we were in Tahiti.
Oh, okay.
But Ariki means chief.
Okay.
In Hawaiian.
Well, so you had guys
and
both
Ali'i.
Answered. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Well, Ali'i is Hawaiian, right?
Ali'i is Hawaiian.
Ariki is like an Easter Islander.
Okay. It's just like aloha and talofa.
Yes. Cognates.
Yeah. Interesting. It's very good
thank
drink.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you,
it's
Alan.
It's quite good.
This episode is brought to you in part by Steadfast Pomade. Steadfast Pomade is a strong-holding, medium-bodied, water-based styling product for men and women, which leaves your hair looking slick, neat, and shiny with a clean, fresh scent. Its unique formula allows you to easily restyle your hair throughout the day and washes out with ease. Steadfast Pomade is American-made and veteran-owned. Available in original and anchor hold. Get yours today at steadfastpomade.com. Tame the waves and keep it steadfast.
So, another thing that we used to do a lot is there was a place called Sea and Jungle Imports.
Yes.
Did you ever go there?
I never got to see it.
On San Fernando Road.
Sven tells me stories about it.
Oh, man, we used to go there all the time. That place had a big gorilla out front. And it was right there on San Fernando Road. It's so sad. It was gone.
I used to work right by there, and I never even went in there.
But you saw it, right?
I did see it, yeah.
It was a great place.
Don't you hate that?
Yeah.
Why did I never walk in there?
Well, we used to live in that place.
I bet they were saying the same thing. You know, when Bajuca was closing, a lot of us rushed to take advantage of the final days.
Yeah.
And one of the waiters said, you know, very plainly to us, he said, I'm glad you guys, this is so important to you, I'm glad you're all here, but it would have been great if you guys showed up more.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, yeah, that's a good point, because you tend to think a lot of these places are going to be around forever.
Well, take it for granted.
I'll tell you, I did my part, because I was there almost every Friday with my kids. And the thing about the Bajuca is the drinks weren't the greatest, the food wasn't the greatest, but just it was
the ambience was amazing.
It was the sum of all parts, right?
Yeah.
It was
palatial. I mean, it went on. It was a labyrinth. It just went on for...
They wanted to go there just because it was like eating in Disneyland.
Yeah.
Right? And we always found something that we could eat. Although sometimes it could be challenging there.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, those yams were really good. Right?
Yeah.
And the sandwiches were really good. And they had the really delicious salad dressing.
Oh, yeah.
Remember they were selling that?
Yeah, I think they're, I don't know if it's still part of the family's plan, but there was an idea that they were holding on to the Bahuka name because they wanted to commercialize the dressing and have that carry on after the restaurant closed.
I hadn't heard that, I, you know, maybe 6 months after the restaurant closed, I bumped into one of the owners at Trader Sam's. And I asked her, you know, a little bit of detailed about what was going on with the Bahuka. And she had told me that, you know, there was somebody in the family had gotten ill. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were had run the business for so many decades. They just felt like, oh, it's time. You know, this person is ill. You know, they don't want to do this anymore. They want to retire. And so we just thought we would sell the place and hang it up. And she said, but, you know, we are hanging on to the name. And at the time, now this was several years ago, she said that they were considering reopening the Bahuka as a bar only. They wanted to simplify it and not have to do the restaurant piece anymore.
Yeah. Seriously.
So. Yeah, but this was several years ago. So.
But they got rid of everything, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
It'd be hard. We have some of it in here.
I have some of it at home.
Yeah.
I have some of it.
Or do we have to give it all back?
Yeah. I ain't giving mine back.
Oh, I would say if it brought the Bahuka back.
I give mine back.
Yeah. I give mine back.
If it brought it back, yeah. If they said, like, hey, we need our stuff back so that we can reopen, yeah, I'll bring my stuff back.
Hopefully they're not listening to this podcast, I hope.
No, let me put an asterisk on that. If it came back with a little bit better drinks.
And, oh, okay. Yeah.
I like the grenade just fine, but not that much.
Yeah. Speaking of bad drinks, it always surprises me that places have bad drinks because as an amateur bartender, it's not really Friday that night. Difficult, I think, to make
Friday night.
A drink
Sorry.
That tastes
I agree with you.
Pretty good, you know?
Names.
I don't know. It's not that expensive to buy the...
We were at a nice bar on Friday night. Two of them.
We had two nice
bars. Oh, yeah.
And the drinks.
Two classic Los
two
Angeles
classic,
bars.
Yeah, bars. And
now, there were some complaints about the drinks, but I will say this. When the bill came... Our cocktails were about $5 a piece. Yeah. So I
you get what
I
was
paying for. If you're going to pay $5 for a cocktail, you have no right
so
to complain.
So this is an example of you get what you pay for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
I
would rather pay more and have something that tastes good.
Well, the second bar we went to is they're trying
expensive.
To renovate another classic LA bar and upscale it a little bit, bring it into the modern era. Drinks were more expensive and the quality somehow was even worse. But that is, I mean, knowing people in the bar industry, it is very tough to get management on board when they'll see the numbers and see the cost of everything, but not necessarily
but it
the
seems
value.
Like more people are more sophisticated that are drinking. So,
yeah, we're definitely in a cocktail renaissance for the past almost 10 years now.
Yeah.
But bars are slow to catch on, especially these. I mean, some of these bars have been around going on 80 years.
Right.
So they're going to be slow to pick up.
So, Alan, for the people that don't know, I hope it's okay that we talk about what you do for a living.
Sure.
So, Alan is... I'll let you explain what you do. Alan is involved with SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yes. I'm
deeply involved.
Deeply involved.
I'm the supervising animation director on the show.
And so how much influence do you have with what is actually part of the show?
Well, I don't really actually have a lot to do with the writing or that stuff. But I'm mainly involved with the animation.
Okay.
He tells people what to do.
He's the big boss.
He's the boss.
Not really.
No. Well, yeah.
And then you've also been involved with other projects. You're also I think you did
Simpsons.
I worked on The Simpsons.
I know so many people who have worked on The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Alan's not that special.
It's a dime a dozen.
That's what he's trying to say.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying that's it's so interesting to me that I know. I've known probably three animators, and what did Brad Abelson do for The Simpsons? Was he just an animator? Was he an art director or some sort?
Do we have to talk about Brad?
I know.
He was a storyboard guy.
Oh, he was a storyboard guy for The Simpsons.
Yeah.
He was a storyboard artist, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And then I've just, it's just that seems that it's such a popular show to work on with tiki people. So that's what I find fascinating. But what I wanted to talk about with the SpongeBob stuff, you know, that was my son's favorite. He's in college now. He's going to UCLA. Thanks. That was his favorite when he was a kid. And
thanks for making me feel old.
Well, it has a special place in my household because of that. So,
oh, that's good.
You know, like I was at I think it was a PetSmart or something, and they had the SpongeBob aquarium decor.
Yeah,
right?
I've seen those.
And I had to get it because so I did. I got the house. I got the pineapple house, and then I got the and I got Squidward's house, which is the Moai.
Yeah.
Right? And I still have I have it on a shelf in my not in my room, but upstairs in my other
We should have one
I have
of those
another
in here.
TV room. You should.
Yeah, Tiki Tony sent me a picture of those, and they are pretty cool.
Oh, they're totally cool. Yeah. Now, I drove up to Reno when Trader Dick's was closing down, and I think it was the $3.95 that you take up there. Did you know that there's a house that looks like SpongeBob's house?
No.
There's like a pineapple shaped house. I took a photo
made after SpongeBob or before?
It looks
1930s?
Like 1930s. It looks like an older building. It looks like an
Art
older
Deco-y.
No, it's the shape of a pineapple.
Oh, I want to see that picture.
I wonder if the SpongeBob generation
send it to
is
you.
Building their
it.
Own homes.
I pulled it over and I
what's that?
See, I wonder if the SpongeBob generation is building their own homes. Just
so how long has that Quiet. Show been in production?
I believe it premiered in 1999. So we're coming up on our 20th.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's the year that my son was born. It was 1999. So let me ask you this. So we look back at things with nostalgia. And like we look back at the Super Friends and Sigmund the Sea Monsters and Wonder Bug. And
who? How about Popeye and Captain Kangaroo?
Popeye and Captain Kangaroo. Have you ever thought about what kind of legacy that show has created? Something like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's huge. So it's SpongeBob's an iconic character now.
Now, and I'm curious about, you know, a lot of people don't like to take home their work. Do you ever like when you see SpongeBob images wherever you are out and about? Do you ever think like, oh,
well,
I just don't want to see that right now?
It's a little weird when you go to a long time ago when we would go to like Italy or Tahiti or something, and you see SpongeBob, you know,
looming.
Merchandise. It is a little weird. You know, it's like...
Yeah.
Well, there's also... You have the unique problem also of running into the illegal knockoffs.
Yeah. Which I love. Like, this is my favorite SpongeBob thing. It's this...
oh, cool is that?
It's
crappy.
A Patrick Bank that was bought in Alvera Street. And
really on model.
Yeah,
there.
I don't think it was.
You really need to describe that.
Okay, so it's a ceramic Patrick. So Patrick is the starfish, but this one.
The proportions are really good, aren't they?
Yeah, it's crazy.
It looks a little melty.
So
it's not on model, is it, Alan?
No, but that's why I like it.
And wait, does Patrick wear green shorts like
mm-hmm.
that? Okay.
Okay, so. These characters, are they all based on specific people that maybe somebody knows?
Well, I've heard that Squidward was based on somebody, not me.
Okay.
What about,
some people do say that.
What about my computer wife?
Karen?
I get that reference.
Because
Karen is the name of the creator's wife.
Okay.
Creator of SpongeBob.
Because Patrick reminds me of... Did you remember the TV show Coach?
Yeah, of course.
Do you remember the blonde-haired, he was like a dumb jock kind of guy? That's who Patrick reminds me of.
Well, you know it's the same actor that does the voice for Patrick.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's built. Why it sounds just like him.
Yeah, that would explain it.
So he has the same inflections and he talks the same way.
Yeah, he sounds just like it.
He sounds just like it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's Bill Fagerbakke.
Alan.
Bill.
You're not supposed to say that.
Bill Bill, I'm having trouble pronouncing his name.
Does he do any of the other voices? How many of the voices are done by the same person?
Well, the main voices are...
Well, isn't SpongeBob kind of Pee-wee Herman-ish?
Is he?
A little bit?
Yeah, Pee-wee was influence on SpongeBob.
Oh, was he really?
And Jerry Lewis, I think.
Oh, really?
And Alan, you show up in... I know at least
couple
one of the episodes.
Of them, yeah.
Does he
really? Buns and thighs.
Buns and thighs.
That's it. That's the reference I thought you were making earlier. Was the buns and thighs.
Buns and thighs? Is that Alan?
That's Alan.
Is it really?
And plus, Alan.
Wait, how do I get a character on SpongeBob?
you have to work on it for 20 years.
Can you get me in there?
No. Sorry, Adrian.
I've been asking for several years. The answer's always the same.
Yeah, but you're just like everybody else, though, Mike. You look like everybody. No, you look like this one guy.
He looks like a movie star.
He looks like this wild and crazy guy.
No, you know what? I used
with an
to get,
arrow. With
I
an
used
arrow
to get the Steve
head.
Martin references, but now, ever since Stranger Things came out, David Harbour, who plays the sheriff,
you know what? Yeah. He looks just like me. Have you seen it?
Wait,
yeah,
no.
I was just telling you the story.
Have you
he's
seen
a
it?
Really good-looking yeah. guy. Come on.
He's a...
Oh, no, David Harbour?
Okay,
he's
no, just kidding.
he's a little bit better looking.
Wait, David
Wait,
Harbour
Michael
or me?
Is.
We have a lot of the same mannerisms. It's trouble. I've shown up at parties of people I didn't know, and they've given me double takes. And, you know, this being Los Angeles, they're like, oh, I'm sorry, we thought you were a different friend of ours.
What you need to do is...
He needs a dress and a ranger outfit.
He's got a beard,
that's
right?
Halloween is.
It wasn't the same kind of beard that he had.
No, we have different facial hair and he has different hairstyles.
Uh-huh.
But
can
other
fix
than that,
that,
like, we've, yeah, it's, we're in the land of...
I think when I first met makeup. You, I was thinking Steve Martin, but it's more your sense of humor.
Yeah. I've literally run into Steve Martin a number of times, and I had been getting the, hey, you look like Steve Martin line since I was really, like, way too young to even know who Steve Martin was. Yeah,
I would never have thought Steve Martin.
And there used to be a store in Los Angeles called the Writer's Computer Store, I think. It was like an early store just for writers, but they needed writing software, script writing software, that kind of stuff. I was going in there one day. He was walking out. We ran right into one another. I guess we were both in a rush. And he took a step back. I took a step back. We look at each other. And I think, oh, we're going to do that thing. Like, you know, where you... Oh, am I looking at my mirror image? Nothing. He just kept walking right by.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You look like Steve.
Yeah, oh, you look like me. Yeah, nothing.
Am I looking at a mirror? Did they put a mirror out here?
Do you know who... I think his name is Chad Smith. He's the drummer for Red Hot Chili Peppers.
No, somehow, even living in Los Angeles for... 20 plus years, I've missed all Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Okay.
Like it was never a band that.
Well, apparently he and Will Ferrell look very much alike.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
right.
No, I've seen that where they've done the
and they've done things together. Thank and he you. Said that one time he was at some fundraising event and he was at the buffet.
Wait, which one, Will or Chad?
Well, both of them were there, but Chad Smith was telling the story that he said, I was at a fundraising event, and I was at a buffet table, and well, I guess he's at the buffet table next to him, and then they look at each other, and Will Ferrell looks up and down at him, and he says, you're a handsome guy, and then he walks away.
That's good.
Yeah, for some reason, I didn't get that treatment.
I just brushed you by.
Almost like I was an absolute nobody.
So I'm sure you've considered doing the Stranger Things costume for Halloween.
I considered, and I am definitely doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
You're
really?
Glad to do it.
Oh, of course. I have to start growing some facial hair.
You know,
I thought you didn't want to do that.
And who's invited you to a party?
I'm just curious. I'm not saying you haven't.
No, I got the subtext of what you're saying. Yeah. And it's true. I haven't been invited to any parties yet. That's not the point. I assume if finally my costume is good enough, I'll get invited to one of these Halloween parties.
You can go with us.
You should put the costume on. You can make some money down on Hollywood Boulevard.
There you go. Not doing what you think.
Yeah, not doing what you think. I mean, like, just taking pictures. Get your mind out of the gutter.
I will say, I have a friend who has already said he'll go as 11. 11 is the female character, one of the children.
The girl?
The girl.
Does he look
but
like...
But he looks a lot like a young girl. And he's already got a shaved head. And he brought this to me. He petitioned me.
He's like, he has a shaved head?
He said, I'll even try to find you the sheriff's outfit if you'll go in. I've got this great dress.
He'd have to wear that that dress that she wears.
Yes, that is the point of a costume. You put on the things.
oh, really?
It's a lot better than showing up at parties. Be like, yeah, I know I'm just in a
tracksuit. No wonder I never do well at these parties.
So you guys have all seen Stranger Things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the new It movie?
No, thank you.
Stephen King?
No. Have you?
I did. Now,
I won't let.
So should
Alan
I?
See
so
it.
Should I not talk about it then? If you guys,
you, I mean, we've all read the book. Am I right?
No,
we're not going to see it unless Alan wants to go see it.
Well,
so I won't talk about it then because I don't want to spoil it.
Let's.
Well, what get about into your audience?
Some kid gets his arm ripped off.
Audience, right?
I feel like we're burying the lead of why you won't let Alan see the movie. You just slip that in there like, oh, I'm not going to let him see it.
That's what I get from Alan all the time. I won't let him go to movies.
Oh. He won't let you go to the movies?
No.
You heard it here first.
It's work, work, work. On SpongeBob.
Get back to work. Go back to work, Alan.
SpongeBob's waiting for you.
And or a reasonable knockoff from Olveris.
Yes.
So this is going to transition me into... scary stories.
Oh, so dear.
We talked about, I'm going to be doing some scary stories for the Halloween episode. And I'm curious if you guys have any scary stories that you would like to share.
Do you, Michael?
I don't think, like, mine are scary to me because I live them, but they're not. Like, when they translate, there's like, oh, you just sound like something slightly weird happened to a young kid, and we don't care.
Okay.
But yours are properly, like, weirdo, scary, universal scary stories.
Now, we're living in a... We're sitting in an old house in Echo Park, in an undisclosed area of Echo Park, where Mike Hantula likes to stand on the corner with a cardboard sign.
It's not always the corner. Look, I have to clear this up. It's not always the corner. I roam the streets like a modern nomad.
With a sandwich sign.
In my mind, this is much more romantic than you guys make it out to be. But yes, there is one of the sandwich board signs.
While we were setting up for this podcast, someone slammed a door upstairs.
That's something, right.
Slammed a door upstairs. And we all looked at each other and said, what was that?
But you refused to go up and check it out.
I don't think this house is haunted.
Yeah, I don't get the feeling there's anything weird in this house. Not like the house I lived in college.
Ah.
Dot, dot, dot. Yeah.
Oh, nice tell us more about
nice
this.
Nice segue.
During the early Tiki years.
Oh. And where was this?
Northridge.
Northridge, okay.
I lived with some friends who I was in a band with.
Which band is this?
It's called Monitor. And we lived in a house, a 1926 Spanish Revival house in a neighborhood of mostly much newer houses. This was definitely the oldest house in the neighborhood. And
didn't have like a weird backyard or...
Oh, God, there's so much weird shit about this house. It's amazing. It was actually two houses on one lot. Sharing a big yard.
Now, do you know the history of the house? Did somebody die there?
We don't know anything about the house. I tried to pull the permits and stuff for the house because I worked for the planning department.
Okay.
And all I could ever get was one, you know, like mimeographed or whatever they call that old black and white kind of copy of just like when it was the year it was built.
Like a microfiche. So,
yeah, that type of thing. There wasn't much information about it, so I don't know who lived there or anything, but Alan's leaving because he's heard these stories maybe 185 times.
As a quick interjection, I do think it's very important with couples that there should be a safe word that they have when it's like, I've heard this story a thousand times already.
Oh, for a story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
where
okay.
They could just be like, oh, you're going to tell that story?
Bye.
Like two of my friends, they have a thing where...
Because a safe word that I have with Stephanie is cantaloupe. That's what you're asking. But it's not for
you're
story.
Answering a question not, that I wasn't asking.
It's not for stories.
But now that is all I want to know about.
Okay, this because is getting
safe,
scary.
The safe word has to be something that you would not yell out by accident, so no one would ever yell out cantaloupe.
You speak for yourself, sir. And you then, speak for yourself.
And then what happens when cantaloupe is said?
Yeah.
Oh, you stop.
You stop, yeah.
Oh, what's so a, Alan...
Are we pretending you don't
Alan would say cantaloupe, words? But you're asking me a question. I mean, I can't
oh,
stop
no.
talking,
so,
can
right,
I?
Right. No, sorry. No, you can keep
just,
going.
Just very quickly, Adrian transitioned the conversation away from stories you've heard before...
To cantaloupe.
To cantaloupe, to a safe word, well, which I'll allow you to Google later. It has a slightly different meaning than stories.
Okay, continue your story.
Cantaloupe does?
Continue your story, Michael.
Oh, okay, you lost me.
Northridge.
Somewhere.
Northridge.
Okay, it was a
college home.
College, kind of little dilapidated house. There was another house in the back that was miniature, like a 3/4 size house. A very small couple lived there, kind of country folk. They were very short. They were maybe 4 feet tall. So they lived in a small house.
So they literally were small.
Yes, they were small people, and they lived in a small house.
Okay.
They built for themselves. And they were also hunters. They would hunt. They would make bow and arrows and go out up in the mountains and hunt, like, deer and stuff.
Wow.
And this is in Northridge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems so rustic.
But this is also Northridge, and we're talking about the 1970s here?
We're talking, like, 1974.
Okay. So not when you start talking about bows and hunting... In your backyard.
Not probably,
I think like
probably,
1874.
Not 1874. No, yeah. We're 1974. And they were wonderful people, but they also raised rabbits and killed them and ate them. And I was a vegetarian.
Did they raise rabbits specifically to kill them?
To eat them, yeah.
And eat them? Wow.
So you could hear the horrible screaming of the rabbits and stuff.
Could you really?
We'd come home from school, because Cal State Northridge, which is where I went, was really close. I'd come home from school, and there hanging in the backyard would be like a deer, a skinned deer hanging from a tree.
Wow.
It was gnarly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that the story?
No.
Oh, no.
That's just
setting the scene.
Setting, yeah, okay. Setting the scene. It just, when I first moved in there with my friends, from the very first day, weird stuff would happen in the house, you know, like, and typical poltergeisty type stuff, like stuff you'd see in a movie. We never saw anything, but it would manifest, or things would happen in the house, you know.
Yeah.
Like what kind of things?
Doors slamming, lights turning on and off, all kinds of weird shit like that. And that went on. I was in that house for about 10 years.
Oh, so you didn't feel threatened by it. You just... Guys.
Never, we were really creeped out sometimes, but we were never felt threatened. It was just
unusual,
really weird and scary and creepy at the time, you know. Especially if we had guests over and stuff would start happening, like you know, we'd have guests over and then all of a sudden in the kitchen you'd hear all the cupboards slamming and plates breaking.
Did you see that then?
You couldn't see it because we were the living room was separated,
right,
but
right.
Then. You'd run in there and it'd be fine. Nothing would be happening.
You just heard it.
Could hear it. And all the lights would turn on and off slowly, and then all everything turn off and then turn back on. And then you'd start hearing plates flying everywhere.
But you'd hear the plates flying and breaking, but when you went there, everything was fine?
And nothing was broken.
Oh, that's...
One time we went in and one cupboard door was still kind of moving a little.
Wow.
But that was about it.
So an auditory poltergeist.
Yeah, some physical things happen. Yeah.
So, at the risk of breaking a rule and talking about religion, and I'm going to try to keep this from talking about religion, but does that make you believe about in an afterlife?
No, because I'm...
Michael doesn't believe in ghosts.
I don't believe that something... When something happens and we don't understand what it is, I don't assign it to some supernatural agency. It doesn't have to be... Who knows what it is? It could be just... you know, in our minds. I don't know. I have no explanation. It's like UFOs. I'm not sure.
But you don't fill in the blanks with other
I don't fill
ideas.
In the blanks because I'm no expert on this kind of stuff.
Sure.
And I don't believe in spiritual stuff at all, really.
Okay.
I'm a boring atheist.
Okay.
Is that too religious? But that's not religion. That's,
no, yeah. That,
yeah, I suppose it's not.
So it wouldn't so it counts, be, yeah. Right, I can talk about my atheism all I want.
This episode is also sponsored by the Tiki Tea. Founded in 1961, the Tiki Tea is a family-owned and operated tropical drink bar practicing the lost art of exotic cocktail mixing. Come try their house specialty, the Ray's Mistake, a delicious concoction of botanic liqueurs, passion fruit, gin, and rum for only $6 on Wednesdays until 9 p.m. The Tiki Tea is located at 4427 Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, California. For more information, check out their website, tiki-ti.com. The Tiki Tea, Ground Zero for tropical drinks.
But didn't you had some other, like, wasn't there something else that happened in that house that was, like, what one event where it was something about a hallway?
Oh, yeah, that was near the end.
Okay, so near the end isn't a phrase.
The guy says it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was near the end.
But that was
right before all those deaths. But I forget that story.
Before everyone died?
No, but there was something about a hallway.
You mean the stuff flying?
Yes. I feel like you shouldn't gloss over that story.
That isn't even the most spectacular story. There are better ones.
Oh, like, see?
But okay, all right,
I'm not telling you to hold back here.
You're guiding Tim to one of the not more spectacular stories.
That's all right.
There are better ones.
You just enjoyed a cup of tea and nothing happened. That was a good day.
Yeah, that was a really nice one. No, there was a period where you'd walk down. There was a hallway that connected the living room to the bedrooms and a bathroom. And then it curved and then it went into the kitchen. And there was a period where stuff would happen in that hallway a lot. Stuff would get thrown at people, mostly me. I'd walk through there and at first it was like lettuce.
Lettuce?
Yes, like wilted lettuce.
That came from the kitchen?
No, from the other direction, from the living room, would just come and hit me.
Okay, but where would the lettuce come from? It doesn't just materialize.
I know. I don't know where it was coming from.
It was like, it lettuce that
like
you
bought?
Like
someone was throwing it.
Right, but I mean, was it lettuce that you bought?
I don't think so. I don't know.
That's
don't,
what I mean. Like it just materialized
so.
All of a sudden. Like...
Yeah, but then after a while, usually what would happen was if something like that would happen, it would happen for a while and then we would think, oh shit, next time that happens, we're going to collect some of it and take it to UCLA and have their paranormal studies look
right,
at it.
Right, right.
And then it would stop doing it. And then it would replace it with something else a little later. So after the lettuce, then it started throwing
cantaloupe?
Some kind of goop.
Slime.
Should I stop?
No. I was.
You said cantaloupe.
I was saying, would they throw cantaloupe? No, don't stop.
I thought that was your safe word.
Right. Some kind of goop. So just like the movie Ghostbusters.
Yeah. You know, I never saw that movie, but
guys, slime. I'm sorry. The term is ectoplasm.
Yeah.
Ectoplasm.
Not goop.
So we would have this slop on a, you know, would come flying.
Isn't the ectoplasm the stuff that they shoot out of the guns?
No, it is
the goop.
No, ectoplasm.
It's the goop.
Is the goop
ghost
that
stuff.
Slimer. The ghost that's slime. Why he's called Slimer, right?
Is that yeah, plasm. Yeah, okay.
I guess I should watch that movie.
Well,
so watch the first one. Yeah. Don't watch the second one. Watch the first one. No,
Planet of the Apes.
Not the remake. Watch the original. Yeah.
Is the fireplace story worth telling?
That's a good one. The fireplace, the basement story,
the fireplace.
I love that you guys are just burying all these good stories.
Because you guided him towards the
bad one.
The most boring
towards
one.
Towards the one I knew, because he was refusing to tell us any other stories.
I want to make it known that you guided him towards the story where he got lettuce thrown at him.
Wait. Hand too long.
Are we pretending that that's not an amazing story?
Tell him about the time that they threw lettuce at you.
Mystery lettuce flies out of his hallway and we're just going
what
to
is
say,
that
like,
all
that's a normal
about,
thing.
Right?
That's not
about?
Worth talking about.
Ooh, scary.
But there is this connective thread in a lot of people that tell stories like this, where something to the audience that's hearing it would be like, oh, that sounds insane. And they never think like, oh, we should do something about this. We should hold on to this.
I know why.
At the time,
why don't we?
The brain just normalizes it and like, huh, I'm sure there's a reason.
At first, you know, when it first was happening, you're thinking, oh, that must have, I don't know.
Well, you're probably surprised.
Yeah, exactly. Sure, yeah. And then you're like, oh, it was just an accident, or maybe I dropped it or something. But then it would happen again, another day, and then it would start to seem weird. And you know.
So just out of nowhere, lettuce would hit your chest.
Yeah. I mean, stuff came out of nowhere kind of a lot in this house, like the dishwashing detergent. Remember that story?
That's why they do now.
Remember
that,
Alan?
Yes, of course.
You want to tell it?
Well, they would all buy the things that
our roommates,
everyone would use, the
right
dishwashing detergent. And for a long time, the dishwashing detergent would just keep, you know, refilling. It would be like a different color every time.
Oh, and, wow.
And
I believe that's called ectoplasm.
Wait, you don't know the story yet. Go on.
And so Michael would talk to one of his roommates.
No, wait. Remember what happened. Okay, so we would use the dishwasher detergent, and when it got near the bottom, it would fill up. It'd be filled up again, and it would be a different color. And I would just think, oh, Lori must have bought dishwashing detergent. I didn't even think of it.
Yeah. Did it still smell fragrant?
Yeah, it was just like dishwashing
detergent.
Just like
this, yeah.
And then one time I went in there in the kitchen and it was filled up again, but the dishwashing detergent was brown.
Oh my God.
And I was like, this is weird. Brown dishwashing detergent. Okay, Alan. So then.
Go on. It's your story.
Okay. I was just testing Alan because he's heard these 185 times. So
I was trying to do an abbreviated version, but come on.
But I think brown is significant.
It is significant.
It's an unusual color for dishwashing detergent. Like, I think dirty dishwashing detergent.
They were sending you a message.
So what happened was I was living with my friend Lori, who was our bass player, and her husband Steve, who was our keyboard player, and Lori's mother, who was a good friend of mine, and her mom. And so when Lori came home from school, I asked her, you've been buying, or someone's been buying dishwashing detergents, and I'd like to, you know, reimburse you for the dishwashing detergent. And Lori said, oh, I haven't been buying it. I've been thinking the same thing. And so when Steve, her husband, came home, same thing. And when her mother came home from work, none of us had bought the dishwashing detergent. For months, no one had bought dishwashing detergent.
So this spirit or ghost, or whatever you want to call it, wanted to make sure that you guys were clean.
Is that what it was?
But not too clean, because they were giving you brown.
Brown detergents.
But although, was it still fragrant?
You know what? I don't remember that.
In a similar vein, are you guys familiar with the Winchester Mystery House?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
San Jose? Yeah. So it's a home. Yeah, okay. You know the story. Mm-hmm. The woman that Sarah Winchester built.
Yeah, yeah.
Her sister lived in our hometown, which is a few towns away, in this town, Los Altos. It was much smaller.
Los Altos, yeah.
Yeah. So her sister's house was there and built in a similar era. And the family that lived in there when I was growing up, they said, look, you know, the Winchester Mystery House, it's become an attraction. It's this big thing. We don't really want a lot of attention, but there's some weird stuff happening in our home. And it was in that same vein of they'd leave dirty dishes out when they would go out somewhere, come back, and everything would be clean when they got home.
That would be like my house.
And
that's the kind of stuff that would happen.
They could not explain. They're like, like the doors would be locked, windows all closed.
Yeah. The vacuum too?
They didn't get into too many details. It was mostly around the dishes and things being put away. Things were always kept very tidy there.
So they were appreciative that they were killed by their guns.
Yes. What?
Oh, so yeah. That's a good pull.
This is another
that's
spirit.
Knowing the whole Winchester history,
right? Another spirit that wants things clean.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, like the Winchester home. That was the story with the. I don't know what her first name was.
Sarah Winchester.
Sarah
was
Winchester.
The wife of Mr. Winchester, who made Winchester firearms.
She believed that she was appeasing the ghosts of everyone that was killed by a Winchester firearm, right?
Right.
Building and building and building onto her house.
How would that
do? That she would keep, her belief was, as long as she kept her home under construction, the ghosts would be kept at bay, where spirits would be kept at bay.
Right.
So she'd build and build with OCD. No rhyme or reason. So it'd be building stairways that go into nothing. You open a door and there's no
floor. A staircase would end up at the ceiling.
Yeah.
And then you'd have a door that would open up on the second floor over nothing.
Over a courtyard, over an open room with no floor in it.
Yeah. Yeah. And
it's an amazing home. But
it is.
Yeah, we're going there next month.
Yeah.
Have you been there before?
No, but we're going to go. We're visiting there.
Oh, you have? Yeah, it's a great tour. And, you know, I don't get the idea that it's, or I don't get the feeling that it's haunted or anything. It's just a weird house that was built at a time when building codes didn't exist. And that's why you have all these strange things with the way that the house is designed. And so I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, they do these flashlight tours at Halloween.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can make any place creepy. You know, absolutely. If you turn the lights out and you walk through it with a flashlight, you know. So...
Yeah. Well, this house famously has a ghost. Anyone that walks up your stairs is followed a few steps behind by the ghost of the Hale Kahiki.
We have a very creaky.
Very creaky. Very creaky.
Well, no, I mean, the thing about the Winchester Mystery House, though, is it's not, it doesn't even matter if you believe in hauntings or not. It's that this is, you're seeing the workings of a disturbed mind. Like, this is not the building of someone.
That's exactly what it is, the workings of a disturbed mind.
What are you trying to say about my house?
The workings of a disturbed mind.
Now, your house, you and Alan have a gorgeous home. This home, this home is, how do I describe this for our listeners? You want to give it a shot?
I can take a shot at it. I mean, I think it would be very helpful to describe the home bar that we're in, too, at some point.
Well, we're going to describe that also, I want to start with the main house itself. So it's classic, what would you call this architecture? It's
Spanish Revival.
Revival. I was just going to say Spanish, but Spanish Revival. 1930s, wood floors with beams. Spanish tiles. Tell us about the tiles.
The only original tile in the house is in only one bathroom, correct, Alan?
Mm-hmm.
One of the bathrooms has the original tile in it.
Now, what I'm getting at is you designed the tiles that are in here now.
Yeah, there's lots of other tile installations in this house.
And it all looks period correct. So... the home is situated on a hillside, so if you walk out into the backyard... The yard slopes down, and I guess at one time when you first purchased the home, there was absolutely no landscaping, right? It was just a dirt slope.
Oh, wow.
And now there's
overgrown mess.
And now there's this gorgeous pool area and patio area just below it that
we're doing a disservice to the home. I mean, from my outsider's take on it, I knew 1930s era Spanish Revival, but the home is immaculate. And it's when you step off of the street, you feel like you're entering a different era.
You completely do.
They've decorated their home with everything is of era up on these upper floors. So anything that's in the Spanish Revival parts of the home
Straight out of Architectural Digest right now.
1930.
Do you feel like when you walk into this home, every time I walk into this home, no matter what I'm wearing, I feel like I'm underdressed?
Every time I've been out with Michael and Alan, regardless of location.
You feel underdressed.
I feel underdressed, and then they inform me, oh, you're underdressed.
Right, there you go.
I had an Oscars party at my home, innocently invited them over to just enjoy an afternoon of TV watching. They show up in, like, vintage Hollywood formal attire.
Wait. You guys were invited to an Oscar party?
Ah!
Yeah.
Oh, poor Adrian.
Yeah, it was called the Don't Tell Adrian I'm Having an Oscars Party.
Oscars Party,
right.
Because he'll just wear shorts.
He'll wear
shorts and flip-flops.
And a Tiki T t-shirt.
Yeah, the thing is, the joke was on them because they forgot that I have a rambunctious dog who sheds her hair.
Likes wool gabardine suits.
Yes.
And likes to jump.
And loves to jump.
I know.
And then in the basement of the home... Do we call this a basement? Is this a basement?
It is the basement.
Yeah.
Okay. And the only reason why I ask that is because we're on a slope property, and so it's, you know, it's not really underground. It's just at the lower part.
Well, it
of the
is
property.
Sort of.
This is cut into
that's
the hillside.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Okay.
That's so, the front, under the front yard over there.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So it is a basement. So that is where we are right now. We're in their home tiki bar space called the Hale Kahiki, and it is a very classic looking, what you would imagine of a vintage Polynesian pop styled tiki bar from the 50s. And we've got beams here that there's really some creative stuff happening here on these beams. So I know the secret on how you did all these. Do we want to reveal that or is that?
Sure. Well, I want to hear what your secret is.
Yeah.
Well, the secret is that the tapa patterns that are on these beams here were not painted. They were stamped.
Stenciled.
Okay. Oh, stenciled. Okay.
Yes, I cut out stencils. I still have them.
I thought you cut out stamps.
No, I cut out stencils. So if you want them, I still got to have them.
Okay, great. So so here's the thing. All this time, I thought these were stamped. Now, for Tiki Oasis this year, we built a bunch of lamps that we made as temporary lamps for our room party. We use poster board. Okay, I'm revealing secrets here. We use poster board. And
we went to that party.
Were you there?
Yeah.
I saw you on the grass. Oh, you guys are going to be in my my podcast video, by the way.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you guys made the final cut.
We made it. Awesome.
Yeah. So you're on there. I'll show you a video of that. But so thanks for coming to the party. Now, did you see the lamps?
You.
The lamps that had the tapa print on them?
Yes. I don't... I mean...
So those weren't real...
I just wanted to...
They're not real lamps.
Go to bed.
Okay.
I'm so tired.
They're made with poster board with the tapa print patterns that what we did is we bought rubber sandals from the dollar store and we cut them up into stamps because I thought these were stamped.
Oh, really?
I didn't know they were stenciled.
Damn,
I thought they were stamped.
So we
stole the idea thinking that they
thanks
were
for
stamped.
Stealing my idea.
Oh, yeah,
getting
yeah,
it
yeah,
wrong.
Yeah. You're welcome. Imitation is a sincere form of flattery.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So we made our fake lamps using. I was going to say the same technique, even though it's not.
So yeah, one of the infuriating things about Michael and Alan is they were having
just one of the many.
I have a collection, a book, if you will. But Michael, you had this past summer a gallery show at These Days for your band and art collective.
Yeah.
Monitor and World Imitation
Thank
Productions.
Thank you for telling the world about that.
Yeah, it was a superb show of, I think, some really spectacular art.
Thank you for telling all three of our listeners.
Yeah. Now go buy the catalog.
There was a good book that accompanied the show. But the part that infuriated me was not the quality of the art, which is a separate story and intimidating in its own right. But they set up a tiki bar for the gallery opening and closing. And then they left it there the whole time. But it was foam core and just black and white prints. One of your bands, because you were in a band called the
Tikis.
I was
in a band called the Tikis, yeah.
And you had a logo that itself translated very well to a tiki bar.
Right.
So they essentially translated the logo into this black and white on styrofoam flat build of
Huge.
A tiki bar. So yeah, it was...
10 feet tall?
Sure.
More?
Yeah. Ooh, 20 feet. Why not?
30.
35.
It was a proper, like, full-size tiki bar built out of this logo, but just in the simplest terms of production, it was black and white prints on styrofoam, and it looked gorgeous. And they did not let it slide that their bar that they threw up for this temporary show was much better than my home bar.
We're getting back to it.
Well, here's the thing. Michael and Alan don't do anything halfway.
True.
Right?
Very.
I mean, like, we're in the Hale Kahiki. It's excellent.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always feel And what did I say to Alan when I walked in here? It was just me and you, Alan.
Today?
Yeah. It would be weird if
that was a couple drinks ago. Sorry.
What I said is it's always a treat to be in
here.
Oh,
that's right.
It's always a treat to be in the Hale Kahiki. So we'll post pictures for everybody out there so they get to see it. This there's a great photo that was taken from where you're sitting, Mike. And it's a very popular photo that's all over Pinterest and all over Google.
I
don't know if you know that, but
I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you go to Pinterest and type in Home Tiki Bar, you'll see it.
Is it just of the bar, or is Alan making drinks?
No, it's just of the bar. Yeah, just of the bar. It's obviously a professional photo.
So. Oh, I wonder who took that.
No, I think it was the Punch one
from Punch magazine.
Yeah. I believe so.
A lot of the Punch magazine photos have made their way out. The photo of you two behind the bar.
Yeah.
Pops up in Tiki feeds all the time.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a great article. I mean, I don't know if your listeners have necessarily seen it, but Punch
So we'll
magazine.
Try to put up a link to that if we can find the link.
Yeah. And also, we were recently in another magazine called Flea Market Style.
Oh, cool.
It's a magazine by, who creates this magazine? Someone like, what's her name? Who's the famous person? She went to jail.
Martha Stewart.
I think it's a Martha Stewart magazine. For flea markets. I think so.
I'm sure she'll love that being your qualifier for her.
Sorry, Martha.
Who's that person who did that thing?
We'll make you a drink when you come over. But it's so they did a whole article about our bar in that magazine, which is kind of nice.
Let's find the link to that too. We'll post that too. Yeah. I could talk with you guys all day, but I'm trying to be respectful of your time because I know that you have
Something more important to do.
I've got that sandwich board I have to get back to.
That's right.
Today.
He's got some street walking to do.
Before we wrap things up, I want to start by thanking you guys for making the time to sit down with the podcast. And Alan, thank you for making some fabulous drinks.
Thank you, Adrian.
Those are very good.
We had Five O's, we had Arikis, and there are more on this menu that maybe next time I'll get to try some of the other ones. I've had the Queen's Park, which is really great, and I think I've had the Rangoon Gimlet.
Alan is very accomplished. I mean, his cocktail work is some of the best I've had.
Yeah.
Yeah. Home bar or thank professional you. Bar.
It's excellent.
It really is.
And this is a guy who works on SpongeBob. let's put that in perspective.
Qualifying.
Who would have known?
Right. And so thank you again, you guys. Before we wrap up, is there anything you guys want to promote, shout out, or anything like that? Websites?
My house was a lot scarier than I made it sound.
Right? Right?
That sounded really dumb. Yeah. Lettuce flying. That's really scary, everyone.
That's not your fault. That's Hantula.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Michael.
Hantula wanted the lettuce flying story.
There are a lot scarier stories.
You never told them. You never told us about the difference between the two on Pico and Fairfax, Kelbo.
Oh, the two
locations.
Kelbo.
We have to do this again.
We're gonna have to do this again on a day that we don't have other obligations. I know that I'm sitting with a couple of socialites that have more important things to do than be on the podcast. But I'm just teasing you guys. Let me give you a shout out on your Spoonflower.
Oh yes, yeah, thank you. I have a shop on Spoonflower.
Yeah,
it's Muhlenkot is the name of my shop.
Why don't we spell it out for our listeners?
Okay, Muhlenkott. It's just the shop name that, you know, I have for. And I have lots of, if you're interested in tiki and aloha and Hawaiiana, I've got lots of designs for fabric, wallpaper, gift wrap.
Now, what you don't know is a house, well, I shouldn't say a house, a home tiki bar that I worked on last year. His whole wall is fabric from
one of my designs.
One of your designs.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, he purchased it from Spoonflower.
Thank you, whoever you are.
Yeah, his name is John Galena, and he helped me build the walls for my room party at Tiki Oasis. And
oh, really?
When we were building out his bar, he bought a bunch of fabric with a pattern that he really liked and bragged about to me. And I said, where did you get that? Because I recognized it.
Okay.
He said, oh, I got it from Spoonflower, and here's the account, and blah, blah, blah. I said, that's my friend. I know the guy who designed that.
Oh, right
and
on.
And I said, I'm going to have to tell him that you bought that because you loved his pattern. So he's like, tell him that. So he's excited about, you know, he's using that in his home bar.
Oh, thank you. I'd love to see a photo of it. I probably, when he bought it, I probably said, send me a photo. I'd like to post it. And he never did, clearly.
Ah. Right. I'll send you a photo.
That's the kind of friends you have.
Right. Yeah, I know. I know. I'll send you. Yeah, they all want to know about lettuce and... I got to pick them up on the street
that
corners.
That's a good lettuce story. Look, that story, I'm not going to shy away from this. That lettuce story is amazing.
Oh, Lord.
But I'll quickly say about
your
Spoonflower, about Michael's Spoonflower account, he glossed over the fact that you hand make these patterns. And I know, as a fellow graphic artist, the time involved in each one, he has... thousands, at least right. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds,
thousands.
If not 3,000, over 3,000.
If you've been to Spoonflower and you've looked at tiki patterns, if you Google or you search for tiki patterns, you are probably looking at Mike Bolincott's patterns.
Many of them, mine and Tiki Tony, and
there are a few tiki artists, but most of them are yours.
Are they?
But based on the volume alone, it's a staggering
amount. I think that's what Mike Antula is getting at.
Yeah.
So, is there anything else that we can call attention to that you've got out there?
There's a show coming up on Friday. Is it to will it
this air? Podcast will air
afterwards?
This podcast will air on Tuesday. So yeah, let's give it a shout out.
And the show runs for a month.
Oh, okay.
No, it'll run forever. It'll run as long as, like...
No, not your show.
Oh, his show.
The show okay. right. Malou's is a month longer.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So this Friday night, which is October the 6th, 2018.
Or 17.
17. I'm sorry, 2017. I'm a time traveler. Okay. there's the Art of Tiki show, which Sven and Otto and... Who else is curating that show?
I think it's Sven and Otto. I think Otto is the curator and Sven has written the catalog for that show.
It's a really nice catalog, especially since I mentioned it.
Yeah. And the gentleman from La Luz, I think, is also.
Yeah, okay. I think so.
Got okay. So that's at La Luz de Jesus, which is at the back of Wacko...
Slash Soap Plant.
Soap Plant.
On Hollywood Boulevard.
On Hollywood Boulevard. So I think that show starts at 6 or 7?
Yeah, the openings... No, the openings, I think it's 7... Because there's a book signing at 6.
Yeah.
Okay.
Either way, it's going to be massive.
Yeah. So we'll all be there. I'll be there. And if you guys are able to get out there, come on down and say hi.
I'll sign a book for you.
We'll sign it. Yeah, Michael will sign a book for you. And Mike Antula.
Yes, sir.
The Tiki Bar Name Generator. What is the what's the web address for that?
It's on... Well, you can... The best way to get... to it is just Google Tiki Bar Name Generator and you'll get my site, which
is awesome.
Hantula.com.
Hantula with two T's.
Hantula.
Genius.com.
Ah.
And there's other fun things at Hantula.com. He's got all kinds of mixtapes on there.
It's the home of the world famous Museum of Food Anomalies.
That's true.
It's your home for unmitigated brilliance.
Would weird lettuce be considered a food
poltergeist lettuce would if you had lettuce. Documented it, but you didn't, so
I expect to see an entry on your webpage now for poltergeist lettuce.
I will
is it romaine lettuce?
I'm texting with my curator of the museum. There's a lot of questions that have to be answered about this lettuce. That story created more questions than uh-huh. provided answers.
Alan, where can we find SpongeBob?
And last but not least, Mr. Alan Smart.
Yeah, I'm not selling anything.
Alan is the creator of these fabulous cocktails that we enjoyed today. Thank you for that, Alan.
My pleasure.
And if you guys enjoy SpongeBob SquarePants, Alan is one of the geniuses behind that show. Where is that airing nowadays?
Nickelodeon.
Okay, so Nickelodeon, is there a specific time that we need to...
I think they show it all the time.
Okay. So. Is it in syndication already?
I know it was on Netflix for a while.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it definitely is. After
it's got to be, right?
Almost
20 years.
Yeah, it's been in syndication for a long time, so it's played all the time.
Well, yeah. I mean, Nickelodeon plays it all the time, the old ones and everything. But
syndication is if it goes to
a different station.
Other stations.
I don't know. Who knows?
It's readily available.
Yes, I'm sure people will be able to find it.
They may have heard of it.
Am I overstepping my bounds if I ask for some kind of studio tour?
Or proof?
Not at all.
Proof
or proof?
Proof.
Yeah.
Yes, anytime.
Awesome. All right, I'd love to do that. So
it's fun to go there.
Maybe one of these days we'll get the voice of SpongeBob on the podcast too.
Oh, he would love to do it.
Tom Kenny.
Yeah. No, he would. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So we'll try to arrange that. But thank you guys again. We're at the Hale Kahiki in an undisclosed location in Echo Park. And
even though everyone knows where it is,
and just look for Mike Cantula in the corner with a cardboard sign. Yeah. He'll have an arrow on it pointing right to where it is.
I've cleared this with Alan. If you can find me when I'm wearing the sandwich, not just me out in public. I've got other things I have to take care of. But if you find me with my sandwich board on, and you grab me, and you can wrestle me to the ground, I will take you to the Hale Kahiki, and Alan will make you the drink of your choice.
He's the guy that looks like the one from Stranger Things.
Which I've definitely seen.
Well, guys, let's do a last toast here. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Mahalo, Adrian.
Cheers. Mahalo.
Bye, everyone.
And aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha. And thank you for your great podcast, Adrian.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no. That was a good ending.
That's a great way to end it.
Was that one of the good glasses?
No.
Oh, he has some really old, some 1930s coupes.
Oh, so do we all break them? Wants to start breaking them.
This is not Greece.
Oh, yeah. Greece.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.